not to have friends. The feeling's oh so strong. You got to have friends to make that day last long. Had some friends, but they're gone. Something came and took them away, and from the dusk till the dawn.
And welcome back to issue 39 of Behind the Panels, the comic book podcast that honors those we love by remembering them. I'm one of your co-hosts, Richard Gray.
And I'm your other co-host, David McVeigh. That was a very sweet intro.
Thank you. I thought it seemed very appropriate this week because it's only been a couple of days since we last recorded in our reality. You won't be hearing this until probably a week since the last issue in your reality. But we're doing a very special book this week, which we'll talk about in a minute. But also, it's been a very sad week for the comics news for comics world this week, as Joe Kubert dies. And we talk a little bit what happens when obituaries go wrong. Plus, there has been cause to rejoice, though, in movie news with an old friend or a couple of old friends returning to the Marvel Universe. And we find out what Joe Carnahan would have done if he'd been involved with this particular character. Plus, an Avengers controversy in Japan and our wonderful pick of the week, Pedro and Me by Judd Winnick. But first, just to lighten things up a little bit, here's our vintage clip of the week.
Come on, kids. If you want to grow up fast, take one of these. One puff and they'll soon be in my grasp.
Not so fast, nicotine. If you want to go up fast, take one of these. With my X-ray vision, I can see the harm cigarettes do inside people's bodies. That's why I never say yes to a cigarette.
Was that the weirdest version of Superman you have ever heard?
It was. It was almost like some sort of comedian putting him on.
It was kind of like, you know, Superman's Russian brother.
Not so fast, nicotine.
It is. It's Superman from Red Sun.
Not so fast, nicotine. In Soviet Russia, cigarettes smoke you.
Get your moose and squirrel.
It was bizarre. That was an anti-smoking ad from the 1980s, and we will be talking a lot about public awareness campaigns in this issue, but that was a very odd little one.
Absolutely. I don't know where you dig this stuff up from. I really don't, but I love it. Keep it coming.
Man, I've got a main line to the dark side of this.
All right. I guess that's going to lead us into what we've been reading, huh?
Yeah, look. I'll just kick us off really quickly to say that because it's only been a couple of days since the last show, I haven't read a lot. I read Pedro and Me, and it floored me, which we'll talk about soon. And I haven't read a lot of other stuff. And because we're recording this slightly earlier than we normally do, nothing new's come out since the last show either.
No, because so in real time, tomorrow's New Comic Book Day. So
yeah, and I'm off to see 13 films over the next 4 days. So that's me knocked out of action for a while.
Well, I'll make up for it because I've read a lot. I've managed to plow through a whole bunch of stuff here. I am absolutely, I'm like a junkie with a mainline in his arm. I really am. I am absolutely hooked on the Marvel Cosmic Universe. And what it means, though, is I haven't read a lot of the new stuff that's been coming up, but I will kind of mainline that afterwards. I'm just kind of really hooked on the whole Guardians of the Galaxy universe. And so I've actually gone on and read the follow-on series to Guardians of the Galaxy, which was called, it was a Marvel event called the Thanos Imperative. And with the Thanos Imperative, it actually started in the 25th issue of Guardians of the Galaxy, spread over Nova and a couple of other things. But there was also a miniseries called the Thanos Imperative, which is kind of what they all tied into, which basically is dealing with this epic event where, you know, we've been talking about the fact that the Guardians go around dealing with rifts in space and so forth. Well, the mother of all rifts is opened in space to something called the Cancerverse, which is basically this negative universe where they've killed death. And so everything is just alive and living and nothing ever dies. And it's basically expanded to the point where it's bursting, and now it's bursting into our world. And there are alternate versions of everybody that we know in our universe in that universe. So instead of having the Avengers, there's the Revengers, and they're all very twisted versions of Captain America and all this sort of stuff. And basically, it's the evil version of Quasar is trying to get into our world because he wants to kill Death here as well. And spread this plague. And, of course, it's up to the Guardians of the Galaxy and so forth to try and close it. And they actually have to team up with Thanos. Mm-hmm. And it's a really intriguing book because it delves into all sorts of odd theology and stuff. Because Thanos, I didn't know a lot about Thanos. I knew of Thanos as a big bad character who would show up and cause a lot of problems and get his ass kicked and sent back to his universe. And that's basically, it's kind of like Galactus. And it was just this bad guy that would turn up. But there is a deep storyline that runs through Thanos, where he's basically this lonely last Titan who basically wants to die because he can't be killed. You know what I mean? So he's got this passionate love affair where he's looking for Lady Death all the time. And they go into this whole concept and they explain in this cosmic universe, they're explaining stuff like Galactus and the other, what they call the abstracts. And they're these cosmic beings who must exist because they fulfill a job, kind of like, you know, a spider fulfills a job. We go, oh, we hate spiders. We wish they didn't exist, but they do eat the bugs. You know, and so we need to have spiders in our existence. Well, these abstracts, including people, things like Death and stuff like that, are these abstracts of the universe. And Thanos is kind of one of them. You know, he's kind of this strange Titan who everybody knows, but nobody ever wants to get close to because he's a maniac. But he may not be as big a maniac as we think he is. There is another side to him, which was driven home because after I finished the Thanos Imperative, I went on and I've actually backtracked and I'm now reading Annihilation. Which is how it all kind of starts, the Guardians of the Galaxy. What's really interesting, and I had no idea that it existed, was Annihilation, the miniseries, is tied in with a whole bunch of other comics, as all these events always are. It actually starts with about 6 issues of the Thanos comic. Did you know that Thanos had his own comic?
No, I didn't, but no, I do now.
Neither did I. And it's a great book. It's a really good book because it's basically Thanos kind of wandering the galaxy trying to figure his place out in the world, in the universe, because he literally doesn't know what to do with himself. Everybody fears him. He can't die. He just wants Death to love him.
You know? I'm going away for a couple of days, but I'm stocking up the iPad, so I think I'm just going to blitz the Guardians universe. Because I've read most of the Guardians of the Galaxy series, and I absolutely adore it too. So I want to go back and find all the stuff out as well. I think it's going to make a magnificent film if they get even half of it right.
Absolutely, and there is so much material here that if the film is successful, they will just keep making them.
Wonderful.
I highly recommend the Marvel Cosmic Universe because it is really, it is rich. I can understand exactly why Marvel Films is so excited to make this as a film now. This has the potential to be the next Star Wars.
Wow.
You know, it's got that kind of scope and scale. And if they do it right, we could have the next big science fiction epic on our hands that could go on for years. So here's hoping they get it right. Is all I can say. That's what I've been reading. lots and lots of cosmic.
Nicely into comics news then, David.
All right, let's do that. Oh, actually, I'm not going to do that.
Okay.
I don't think we need that jaunty theme today. I think we want to keep this a little bit more somber.
I think so too. I think we're going to do this a jaunty thing, particularly given that our first story is a very, very sad story indeed for comics fans around the world. Comics legend Joe Kubert passed away this week. Now, those of you who may not be familiar with Joe Kubert's work, let's go and do some of the list. I'm just bringing up a list of his credits now. But
I can already see some of these, so hit us with them.
Well, he created Sergeant Rock to start with. So for that...
and not the terrible Men of War.
No,
the original Sergeant Rock.
He also is best known for his work on Hawkman. He created other books, including Thor, Son of Sinbad, Viking Prince, Tales of the Green Beret. He was, back in 1997, he was inducted into the Harvey Awards, Jack Kirby Hall of Fame, and the Will Eisner Comic Book Hall of Fame in 1998. He is largely associated with DC. Mm-hmm. But later in his career, he did a whole lot of other stuff, including some graphic novels. He unfortunately died 3 weeks short of his 86th birthday this year, but he is survived by his incredibly talented sons, Andy Kubert and Adam Kubert, who themselves are actually very, very, very talented and successful comic book artists. He is one of the originals, one of the legends, and he will be sorely missed by people who have read any comics in the last 30, 40 years, you know?
Absolutely.
He is, so he was 85 at the time he died. And look, he's had a really interesting life. He grew up in Poland and, you know, he emigrated in 1926 and he emigrated to the US as well. So, his life story is probably as fascinating as some of the work that he did. So that he's a true comics legend, and there's not many of them left.
Yeah, that's very sad, very sad.
And though equally sad is the obituary that DC ran for him on their website, and this caused a fair bit of fan outrage. Now, to see if you can spot the bit where this becomes a little bit uncomfortable. We saddened to learn of the death of our colleague and friend Joe Kubert, an absolute legend in the industry. His legacy will not only live on with his sons, but with the many artists who have passed through the storied halls of the celebrated school. His latest work on Before Watchmen, Night Owl, was among his best, and we're honored to have him work side by side with such an unforgettable force in both comics and life. Now,
wait. Wasn't that his sons?
Yeah, but oh no, I think he was involved with it. But did DC just use an obituary to plug a current comic?
Well, there is that, yes.
So that's PR gone a little bit mad. So it's and it just really, like, I mean, if you look at the Bleeding Cool article there, you can see the you can see the fan outrage there, and in fact, DC amended the blog to read as following. An important member of the DC Comics family, Joe made an indelible mark on the entire DC Comics universe, including his renowned award-winning work on iconic characters Sergeant Rock, Enemy Ace, Hawkman, and most recently Nobel.
Okay, so I think my favorite one here is actually on the responses to this. It says, from Larry Hammer, who works at IDW Publishing, "This is what happens when PR Flack writes a memorial."
I mean, absolutely right. I mean, even Mike Mignola just said gross. Mark Wade, when they amended it later, said, "Whoever's responsible, thank you for the DC blog. Kubert, bio edit, much class. You're in more fitting now." So, yes, bad form DC to start with, but at least you've amended it. And again, it is a very tragic turn of events. Oh, very sad turn of events this week to lose such a comics legend. But look, you know, as we always say when these things happen, we have an amazing body of work to remember them by. Mm-hmm. And look, you know, comics have forever changed as a result of these people. So
I agree.
Thank you very much for all your hard work over the years.
And you will be missed.
You certainly will be missed. Now, I think in terms of comics news, that's pretty much it for the week. There's been a few new announcements. Marvel have sort of solidified some of their Marvel Now work. They've done, you know, they've talked about some of the teams that are going to be on Marvel Now, including they've released covers for Fantastic Four and FF, which is the sort of extended Marvel Fantastic Universe as well.
Future Foundation.
Yeah, the Future Foundation, but they're just calling it FF number one. So that's going to happen. It's got a beautiful double cover coming out for that. I'm a little skeptical about this whole Marvel Now stuff, but what I'm not skeptical about is what's happening in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So I think that's a good segue to move on into our movie news.
I think it might be in. Are we going to play themes for this one? This one's not too jaunty. I think
this one's not too bad. Let's just jaunt it out.
We can get away with that.
I think we got away with it. But don't mention the war. Look, the big news for geeks everywhere, and if you heard like a collective sound of joy going up today That was the sound of a million geeks crying out in joy and never to be silenced again. As Daredevil seems to have officially, well, they haven't had an official statement, but every other source is saying this is the case. Daredevil has reverted back to Marvel Studios.
Yes!
I know. It is huge news because, look, for those of you who don't know what this means, Basically, Marvel Studios has been making and funding its own films since 2005. They were sold to Disney in 2009. But prior to that, they had a whole lot of these license agreements with other studios, including particularly Fox and Sony. And Lionsgate as well with the Punisher, because you know, they had rights to make the movies as long as they kept them in development. So we've still got, you know, Spider-Man reboots happening, so that's not leaving Sony anytime soon. Same deal with Ghost Rider, Fantastic Four. Fox have still got a little bit of time on it. And we did hear a few weeks ago that Marvel were apparently negotiating with Fox to say, look, we'll give you an extension on your Daredevil contract if you give us Silver Surfer and Galactus to play in our universe. But apparently Fox turned that down, and now Joe Carnahan tweeted today that his thing's fallen through. It's just not going to happen, that it's not going to have time to get it going, which means that Daredevil will not reach the start of production by October, and which means it automatically reverts back to Marvel. So Marvel now can use Daredevil in their version of New York.
But they can also use Elektra and Kingpin.
Exactly.
And now, Bullseye.
And Bullseye and all of the Daredevil. And Foggy Nelson.
Yes.
So what happens when Foggy Nelson meets Happy?
Yes. That's going to be an interesting turn of it. Although the question is, will any of the none of the contracts will stand?
No, I think it'll all be rebooted. No, definitely. I mean, it'd be the same as if Johnny Storm ever met Captain America. But
here's a thought for you. I'm just going to throw this out there. Jessica Jones in the Alias series, remember we talked about that becoming a possible TV series? Jessica Jones was Matt Murdock's bodyguard.
It's true.
Yes.
The other thing I didn't realize that there was in this Variety article was that the Punisher had actually quietly slipped back into Marvel's hands as well. Lionsgate had the rights to that, and you know they've made two films under that, but maybe nobody cared that it slipped back into Marvel's hands. But yeah, which would mean there's actually two more characters now with Daredevil and Punisher and all the Punisher's people able to play in New York. So as you alluded to, maybe aka Jessica Jones, maybe a bit of Luke Cage action in there. You could have Luke Cage.
We could add Daredevil. Punisher into that world.
Who's that, sorry?
We could add Punisher into that world.
Punisher as well. So Luke Cage, Punisher, Daredevil playing in New York together. I like these mean streets.
I'm liking this a lot. I'm very excited.
Oh, I think this could be the greatest thing that's ever happened. All we need to do now is get some more people back into the Marvel U. But either way, this is fantastic.
What we really need is we need the Fantastic Four film to fall through, because they're actually in development of it right now. But if they can't make it happen,
they're allegedly fast tracking it with Josh Trank. But I think we're all getting our fingers crossed that it falls through, because as geeks, we want to see Josh Trank make this film, but we also would like to see Reed Richards in the Avengers, you know?
And Galactus and Silver Surfer and Guardians.
Oh, absolutely. So, yeah. Look, but the thing is, if you're interested to see what Joe Carnahan's take would have been like, he's put up two sizzle reels on the net. He tweeted out the YouTube links to them today. We've got the link in our show notes as well, so you can see what they look like there. But he's kind of put together a mishmash of different films that he was influenced by that he would have liked to have seen this film head in the direction of. But I think he describes it as something like Serpico in spandex. That's right. He says, think of my idea for a certain retro red-suited Serpico-styled superhero. So
that's awesome. I
would have liked to have seen that sort of version of it as well. So we can only dream.
Absolutely. That would be awesome. I would like to see – I'd like to see Marvel maybe bring Carnahan back.
Look, you know, I mean, just because it's gone back to Marvel doesn't mean – Carnahan won't be involved. I mean, maybe Disney won't be as Carnahan happy as Fox were, but look, I think they'd be mad not to exploit this someone who's clearly enthusiastic about doing it. And let's face it, Marvel Studios have cast left field for directors before, and Joe Carnahan for Marvel Universe is pretty left field. So I'd like to see all this happening. Little bit of quick news that's not in your show notes, Dave, because I just added it. Alice Krieg was cast in Thor 2 this week.
I read that. That's so good. She'd be so good in that Norse surroundings.
Well, yeah, see, this is just a very small role. So either she's going to be like kind of like one of the elf queen, she'll be like the elf queen or something like that. So she'll only be mentioned briefly. You mentioned a character before that a few people have been speculating about, that she could just turn up in like an end credit sequence, possibly as Death.
Yes.
So look, you never know. You never know how these people are going to turn up. All we know is that if she's a villainous type of character, she played that Borg queen so well.
Yes, she did.
we would love to see that again. But finally, just very quickly, while we're still in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, because let's face it, they're the only ones doing anything with movies at the moment. In Japan, who are only just getting The Avengers now at the cinemas.
Oh, wow.
In fact, it's not even out. It's out later this week. In Japan, the Japanese tagline apparently has got some people very upset. Now, the film's tagline in Japanese, I won't attempt to pronounce, but it basically translates as, "Hey Japan, this is a movie." Now, as the article said on Kotaku says, this might seem innocuous enough, and a couple of prominent individuals have pointed out the tagline's more nuanced meaning. According to novelist Toshikiko Yahagi, he says, having an American say, "Hey Japan, this is a movie," is deeply unpleasant. I swear there's no way I'm going to see this film. And the article goes on to draw a few comparisons, saying that someone says he's explained that it would be like colonialists saying to native people, "Hey native people, this is culture." You know, the other time he said he gave the New York Times saying, "Hey Japan, this is journalism." You know, so it's kind of like, some people say it's much ado about nothing. But it has caused offense, but they're still running with the tagline in all the Japanese thing. But as somebody else pointed out, Captain America was a book that quite happily had Captain America punching out the Japanese.
Look, all it says to me basically is that there's some translator that Marvel hired to read their tagline who is laughing his ass off right now saying, "You thought I was saying something else."
This story was sent to me by my friend Ivan Kovac in Japan, so thank you for that, Ivan. I just this just tickled. He literally sent this to me as we were about to record, so this tickled me pink.
I think it's fabulous.
Really love that thing. But I think without any further ado, we should move into our pick of the week for this week. And we won't be playing our very, very jaunty introduction to this comic this week, because it seems a little inappropriate given the weighty subject of the book. Although we should be quick to point out that this is a weighty book, but it's certainly not a sad book. David and I were talking about this before the show. The book is Pedro and Me by Judd Winnick, who you'll know from some of his bigger comics. He's worked on Batman and Green Arrow and a number of, and he's current working on Catwoman for DC. He wrote this book quite a number of years ago, about 15 years ago. But it is a very positive book, we should say up front. It isn't all doom and gloom. This is a book about Judd Winnick, who was in unlikely circumstances. He was a cartoonist who got accepted onto the Real World San Francisco, which those of you old enough will remember was one of the original reality shows on MTV. And he was accepted on the same year that they had the first HIV-positive person in the household as well. Mm. The series is also famous for quite a an infamous scuffle between a number of the housemates, including one of the guys called Puck, who was an absolute douche, and he was still a douche. I've got a little clip I want to play a little bit later, which is from a reunion show. And at this reunion show, this was after Pedro had died, he turned up and was just lying on the floor, being a douche, saying, "Oh, you all kicked me out, so why should I care?" And like Judd Winnick in this particular clip just goes off his nut at him on camera and says, you know, you said that you were happy when he died, so I want you to leave the studio right now. So this was a season where emotions were running very high. Mm-hmm. It quite deliberately put someone homophobic like Puck into the same household as an openly gay AIDS HIV activist. Now, the long story short is that off the basis of this, cartoonist Judd Winnick decided to write a book not just about his experiences in the real world household, but finding out, meeting Pedro and how much he touched him personally and how much his story touched him and how much he'd learnt about AIDS and HIV in that short period of time. They were in a house together. They were literally roommates for 6 months. And how his life changed and how Pedro's story changed so many other people's lives. Mm. And this is about a 190-something page book, which is written and illustrated by someone who's primarily known for his writing now.
We should say, I mean, the illustration style is actually very simple, but it's not about that. It's about what he's trying to say.
And I think this is a really interesting book for us to do because we've done a few non-Kate books on this show. I think it's really interesting that we sort of go back and look at the early work of writers and artists who are primarily known as writers now. Recently we did the autobiographical work of Art Spiegelman with Mouse, of course, who was one of the most famous autobiographical stories that was also quite tragic. Of course, we did a very early work of Brian Michael Bendis recently, very different thematically, very different story. It was a thriller, of course, but it was the early work of a person who is now known mainly as a writer, which is the story with Judd Winnick. Now, with this particular story, it is straight autobiography to the point that he is talking about events that were covered very famously on television. And if you go back, there's not a lot of this footage around because it was only ever released on VHS. But I would love to go back and see some of this real world San Francisco stuff now as a result of reading this book.
Mm-hmm, I agree.
What the really interesting thing about this book is it's a little preachy, but that's the point. The point is to educate people because Pedro Zamora was his whole life was about educating people about AIDS. We find out through Judd's retelling of the story that Pedro came from Cuba at a very young age as a refugee, discovered very early in his life that he was gay and wasn't sure, but because he had nobody to teach him these things, he was abused by men that he met in his life, and he developed AIDS, or he was diagnosed with HIV at a very young stage in his life. But he decided to become an educator, and when he was offered the opportunity to be on MTV's The Real World, he took it as an opportunity to educate a lot of people en masse. Judd Winnick has his sort of liberal assumptions challenge because he always saw himself as a very easygoing, liberal, you know, very left-wing guy. But then suddenly he finds himself in a situation where he's rooming with a guy that has AIDS and he doesn't quite know how he feels about it. And he's not cool with the fact that he's not entirely cool with it, you know?
Well, and it actually challenges his beliefs. And that's one of the things I found really interesting about this book was the fact that he keeps saying – on the surface, he was saying, I'm fine with this, I'm fine with this, I'm fine with this because I am liberal. But once he gets into the situation, in deep down, he's basically saying, am I really fine with this?
And what's really interesting about the story is the way that he writes Pedro is someone who's equally having the same kind of thing but in regards to his illness. He's constantly saying, I'm fine with this, I'm fine, I'm healthy, but slowly he's coming to the realization that he's not well and that he can't keep educating people and denying the fact that he's actually got a terminal illness, you know. Yeah. But he says there's a refrain that goes throughout this, and there's a clip I'll play in a moment where he says, I'm not dying of AIDS, I'm living with AIDS.
Yeah. And that's actually said a couple of times in the book.
Yeah, and this is a refrain that goes throughout the book, and he actually they bring it back up at the end of the book. And I think, you know what, this book is now, it's very much of the mid-90s when it's sort of set. But I think what's really interesting is that he mentions it up front. At the time, most of the stuff we knew about AIDS was from television. Most of the stuff was either fear-mongering. There was a very, very famous ad here in Australia in the 80s, which was this bowling it was basically – it was the Grim Reaper playing 10-pin bowls with people.
I remember that.
It's really offensive now because it's, you know, it's got things like, you know, AIDS, it used to just be for gays, you know, and it's kind of like, wow, you actually got away with saying that in the 80s. But that was just indicative of how little public education there was about this thing. There was a scaremongering about AIDS, and this is actually something they touch on in the book a lot, is that most people saw AIDS as this frightening thing, and he actually draws AIDS as a virus with legs at one point.
No, he actually says that. He says he felt like that's what he would be seeing. He would be seeing this walking around.
You know, but really, you know, and as, you know, times have changed, we now know so much more publicly, but, you know, most of the depictions of AIDS in the media were things like, you know, there was a token episode of a sitcom or a drama where someone would be, you know, sort of wheeled in for 20 minutes suffering from AIDS and then wheeled out.
Wait,
just as quickly.
Does this sound familiar? On this very special episode of Blossom.
No, but that's exactly what it is. And but throughout the – and one of the things he says about MTV, The Real World, and actually – Bill Clinton said in a speech after Pedro died, and I'll, again, this is something that's in the clip, that none of us can now say that we don't know somebody who's living with AIDS because we've all known Pedro. Mm. And that's kind of how I felt after reading this book. You know, I felt as though I actually knew the guy, as though I actually spent that 6 months in
it's,
you know, living.
Very real depictions of these people, even though they're cartoon characters.
Yeah, I mean, they are obviously all based on people, and this is very much almost – but you never get the feeling that he's just transcribed what happened either, because obviously he's putting his own spin on it. Mm. But at the same time, he's crafted this very – because this is only 190 pages covering not just that 6 months, but, you know, Pedro's background, his own background, and the time afterwards. And in many ways, this is structured in a very similar fashion to Mouse, because it is, you know, telling the story of the retelling as well. But it's what's beautiful about this book is that he's written it in a way that you get very close to the characters very quickly, and I found myself very attached to everybody in this house within a very short period of time. So I was there feeling the highs and lows with these people, and you know, I think in any work of literature or any work of art, that's an amazing accomplishment, let alone in, you know, a very cartoonish looking black and white, you know, comic.
And I think it's really interesting because it's not just a tell-all. I mean, as an example, I mean, you could have got really sensational with the whole Puck thing and all this stuff. He deals with that in one panel.
Absolutely.
And it's gone. Yep. And it's like it's never brought up again.
I agree, and I think I thought it was because, yeah, a lot of people would have liked him to have you know, gone on about how much Puck was a douche, but, you know, he's done that in other mediums, you know. Mm. You know, he's spoken about it. I might just pause there for a moment and play this little clip,
okay?
Because I think this is an appropriate moment to do it.
Welcome to today in love and celebration of Pedro's life and the way that he chose to live.
Over the past few years, Pedro became a member of all of our families. Now, no one in America can say they've never known someone who's living with AIDS. The challenge to each of us is to do something about it and to continue Pedro's fight.
I want to thank everybody for coming and to help us inaugurate the Pedro Zamora Youth HIV Clinic, which is a lot more than a clinic. It will be a safe haven and a beacon of hope for so many young people.
Dear Pedro, I'm not sure if you know, but we've been lecturing on AIDS education all this year. It never ceases to amaze us how many people you reached and how great a desire there is for people to know more. We tell them about the myths and the facts of AIDS, but specifically we talk about you.
I want to announce that we've named today Pedro Zamora Day.
Somehow you have to find some type of meaning to your life. I have to believe that there's a sense to all of this, that all the pain that I'm going through, that all the anger, the, all the frustration, that there's something bigger than that. And I believe in a God, and I have this belief that God is never gonna give me more than I can handle at a day's time. My reality today is that I'm a person living with it. I'm not dying, I am living with it. And until my last breath, I will be a person living with AIDS.
Yeah, very, very moving listening to that now.
It's just fantastic.
You know, that was from a 1996 reunion special of The Real World, but obviously there were clips in there from things that happened after Pedro died, and there was a bit in there about, you know, obviously Bill Clinton was speaking, and there was a bit in there of Judd Winnick talking about how he's continued the education of Pedro, and of course that finished with a very, very moving piece from Pedro himself, taking a clip from MTV's The Real World, talking about he's a man living with AIDS. And, you know, so much has happened in AIDS research since then that you know, and I think it's directly the result of people like Pedro making his life and his issues and his struggles publicly available to people. You know,
I'm actually so glad you played that clip, because I actually got to put a voice to him as well.
Yeah,
because up until now I've never actually seen him. I've only read the book, and we've talked about this before. Whereas as soon as I read this book, I immediately actually really wish I had watched The Real World San Francisco. Now, I never watched the series. I actually watched a lot of the first series, and I never really liked it. To me, it was just more reality TV, blah blah blah. I mean, you're right. It's the thing that started the whole thing, and I wasn't that interested to start with, you know what I mean? I didn't really want to watch cameras follow these people all around the house. And that colored me because I didn't watch this season. And I wish I had watched this season, because I think this would have been fascinating to play out.
You know, and I think there would have been sensationalism in this season. We are actually getting the good bits of it in Judd Winnick's story. Because I imagine that, you know, but the thing is, this was, at the time, it was an experiment. They really did just set up the cameras and watch these people react to each other. They'd certainly put people who might react to each other in a particular way together. But it's not like today's Big Brother style shows where they do get, you know, a whole lot of bogans together and watch them have sex. You know, it was very consciously about trying to recreate San Francisco life in a microcosm. You know?
And what's really interesting is that they actually show the behind the scenes in this comic book. And it's really interesting, because in Big Brother, they have all hidden cameras and blah, blah, blah. In the real world, the camera operators are just wandering around the house with them.
Yeah. And he was saying he just, you know, he learnt to ignore them after a while, you know, which is. And I love that panel towards the start where he's saying, it's like trying to go, look, there's a giant elephant over there we have to talk about. And so, you know, there are moments like that throughout this comic where he uses the visual medium of comics to kind of throw in these non sequiturs.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you know, it is such a wonderful, wonderful story. And look, you know, Judd Winnick didn't stop. True to his word, he didn't stop his campaigning when he left The Real World. After Pedro died, he actually went out on the road and actually, you know, went out there and continued Pedro's work. He wrote this book, which is actually being used in some school curriculum.
Hey, look, and it's a fantastic book. I mean, it is. If this book doesn't teach you something about, you know, living with AIDS and so forth, then you missed the point entirely.
More to the point, when he did get mainstream comic success, and particularly with his work that he's done with DC, he didn't stop talking about these issues. You know, he continued to work that into mainstream comics, which is really, you know, where he needed to take this. You know, because this is a great book, but it's certainly not. It's not being read as widely as, you know, Superman and Batman. So
no, exactly,
when he did.
Yeah.
So what was that?
I said exactly. It's not. It's
exactly.
Not.
It's a small print book. You know, I mean, it is the most famous award-winning comic about AIDS and HIV. But at the same time, he has been awarded for sort of working this into the mainstream. When in Green Lantern, he wrote a storyline where it was basically the assistant of Kyle Rayner, I think at the time, was the Green Lantern, came out as gay. Mm-hmm. And then there was a hate crime story in there as well, where the character was beaten as the result of a homophobic attack. But more to the point, and he won GLAAD awards for that, and he went on, you know, daytime talk shows and stuff. More to the point, I first became aware of Judd Winnick's voice in the area through, obviously, one of my favorite books is Green Arrow. And I know Judd Winnick because he started writing on Green Arrow.
Right.
And he wrote in a character of Mia Durden, who was a young girl who was living on the street basically as a prostitute. And she becomes the new Speedy in the new run of Green Arrow. Not the current run, of course, but the then rebooted series. Halfway through that run, he decided to diagnose her with HIV because, you know, her background living on the streets, it seemed like a logical fit for the character she would be someone who could fit into that world. And through that character, he actually gave her, in many ways, Pedro's voice, because it was someone who was a young kid who didn't have any other opportunities, and then used her position in the community to become a spokesperson for HIV/AIDS. There's a scene in one of the comics where she actually goes to school and stands up in front of everybody and gives a speech very similar to the one that Pedro gave at his school.
Isn't that great? I mean, and that gave him a much more mainstream audience.
Absolutely. And so he was able to do that on a bigger platform. Then when she actually became Speedy later on, he did all this before she became Speedy.
Right.
And then when she became Speedy, she became the most high-profile HIV-positive character in comics, which I thought was a wonderful thing to do with his position.
Absolutely.
You know, so I think it's wonderful that he's continued that work, you know. And then, you know, because a lot of people, when he took over the book, there was always the ambiguously gay character of Connor Hawke, who was Oliver Queen's son. And everyone said, oh, he's going to take over the book, he's going to make him gay.
Right.
He didn't, in fact. He actually cleared that up. Just said that no, he was just inexperienced with women, and because he'd lived in a monastery for the last 20 years, you know. Instead, he spun that round on his head, made that a whole different story where he went out awkwardly trying to pick up with Green Lantern, that thing. But focused his attention on this character of Mia, so he kind of, you know, did it from a female perspective. And I thought, look, it's still one of the most wonderful stories that I've read in comics. And, you know, this is not just because I'm a Green Arrow fan. It is a really, really good run of comics. And this is around issue 43 of the 2003 run of Green Arrow, if you're looking for it.
I'm going to go read that.
So definitely go check that out. It's the run that starts with Kevin Smith's Quiver, and it's that run that continues on from there. And it runs for about 75 issues all up, if you're looking for it. It's all collected in trades, so you can definitely find that. But yeah, and I think that's the legacy of this book, you know, that as a result of his experiences in the house, he had a platform to write Pedro and Me, which gave him a platform to bring it into the mainstream, and he's still working in that field today. So, you know, I think my respect for Judd Winnick is just gone up exponentially as a result of reading this book. How about you, David?
What's really interesting is he starts the book off as a failed cartoonist.
Yeah.
And he basically one of the reasons he did this gig was he was trying to raise his profile, but basically he never got his strip picked up. And it's like he was actually kind of down at the beginning of the book. And it was Pedro that turned his life around. And I think it's really the dynamics of these characters are fantastic because you've got Pedro who basically through his adversity, through what's he's going through, he touched all of their lives to such a degree that they all moved on with their lives as well. Judd Winnick managed to actually not only with this book, but then with his subsequent career in, you know, in writing for DC and so forth, he's managed to make the career that he always wanted. And a lot of this is because of his friendship with Pedro. It's that can-do attitude, that belief in himself.
And in fact, during this period, he met his partner, Pam Ling, who he's still with today. He's married to her.
Mm.
So, you know, and it's kind of like, and you get the impression, like everything he says in this book is because Pedro made it possible for me. He inspired me to be a better person.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you know what? You know, I think anybody who reads this book would probably feel the same way.
Look, we talk about essential reading all the time. And what's essential comic books and what aren't essential. This is essential. This is essential reading. This is a book that will make you laugh. I mean, it's got some incredibly funny stuff in it.
That's true. Yeah, don't get us wrong. Don't get us think that we're talking because it's a very weighty issue.
Yeah, there's a conversation. I'm actually looking at a page right now, page 71 of the book, where they're talking about gargling blood.
Oh, I love that.
Because he's basically, they're talking about, can you get AIDS from kissing? And he's saying, no, you're not going to get AIDS from kissing unless you've got an open wound, but then you'd be gargling blood, and who's going to want to kiss you anyway? And it's just beautiful. And he goes walking off, and Pedro walks off going, you're weird. And Judd's like, well, look who's still, you're talking about kissing people while they're gargling blood. You know? it's got these really witty interchanges of dialogue. The relationship between him and Pedro is fabulous.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. It's a really beautiful relationship between the two of them. And I think the way that's written is so, it's so rare to find that in any literature or any art, as I said, let alone in comics. We don't often think of it as an intimate, you know, two-hander of a, you know, back and forth dialogue. And it's great that you're right. You have all these wonderful, amazingly funny moments and really touching moments.
Oh, and just reminded me. I don't have the page in front of me, but there's that exchange between them when they're watching Star Trek.
Oh, I love that.
Which is one of the funniest things I've read in ages, and because they're actually having three different conversations at once and they're all interlinking with each other. And it is so, because it's him, Pam, and Pedro. And it is very funny stuff. And that's what I want to make it very clear to people in this book, that it's not all doom and gloom. It affected you differently than it affected me. And like, I actually read it and found it an incredibly sweet tale. And yes, it's tragic, but it's what came out of that tragedy. And I actually found myself incredibly uplifted by the book. Because
I did too. I want to be clear about that. I did find myself uplifted by the end. But going back when I was finding the clips for this and watching him and listening to him speak and him and Judd speak and all these different clips, I didn't realize how much the book had affected me.
Yeah, and that's fair, yeah.
Yeah, until I actually started looking at those clips. And as you said, putting a voice to you know, a picture on a page, I really connected on a completely different level.
Well, and it's interesting because as soon as you played that clip, I actually found myself getting very quiet. I found myself sitting there listening intensely and realizing how much it had touched me, because suddenly we're hearing them. They're not pictures. They're not cartoon characters anymore. They're not comic book characters. They're people.
Yes.
You know, and that really drives it home. This is essential reading. Everybody needs to get this book. Everybody needs to have a read of this. If you are at all a fan of comic literature, this is comic literature.
Yeah, this should be sitting on your shelf next to Mouse and Watchmen. You know, this is absolutely essential reading for anybody, whether it's a comic or not.
Yeah, and I'll even go so far as to say our pick for next week is another book that needs to be on that same pile, but we'll talk about that more next week as well.
Definitely.
These are essential reading books where, you're right, Watchmen, essential reading. Mouse, absolutely essential reading. This, probably even more so, because this actually touches our current generation. And this is about us now. Whereas Mouse, we can look back at Mouse almost through a filter because we weren't there. And it's history, you know what I mean? Whereas this is right here. This is right now. This is right in front of us. These are real people. I mean, Judd Winnick is working now in comics.
Yeah, and look, you know, and as much as we like to think it's something that doesn't affect us, HIV/AIDS is still very much a reality even in the first world. You know, it is still something that people are living with, people are dying from.
And yes, people are living longer and they are managing it, but it is still a lethal disease.
And I think even though this book is coming from a period where less was known about it, you know, I think that the more books or more people who read books like this and have a clearer understanding of the issues around it and the people who are living with it, the better. You know, it can never be a bad thing.
Agreed. Go out and buy this
now.
Immediately.
Add it to your Amazon basket right now.
Absolutely.
Go out to your bookstore. Whatever you have to do.
Do whatever you have to do to get a copy of this and make sure you read it, because this is essential reading. This is probably the first or second most powerful book we've read since we started doing this show.
I would agree with that.
It's a toss-up between this and Mouse, because they're both amazing books.
Well, I don't think you can. I mean, I think you could put them on that same pedestal, because, you know, they're dealing with very different periods, as you said, very different situations, but they're both such personal and powerful narratives that, you know, you can't help but being affected by it. I had this, as I said, I found the same reaction I had listening to Pedro speak on YouTube as I did when I went to the Art Spiegelman exhibition in France. When I was in Paris, I actually heard the original tapes of Art Spiegelman's father. You know, and actually putting that voice, you know, having that tangible connection, because obviously it's a much further further distance with Spiegelman, because he's a few generations before us.
Yes.
Whereas Judd Winnick is our generation.
Absolutely. Yeah. And this is only, we're only talking, what, 15 years ago?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, he was Real World San Francisco was 1993. So, but he wrote this book a few years after that.
Right. So it's not that long ago.
No.
Essential reading. I'm so glad that you did bring this up, because this is one I wouldn't have thought of.
Look, the last time we mentioned it on the show, we actually had somebody hit me up on Twitter, and I've forgotten whose name it was, and they said, thank you for mentioning Pedro and me in the same breath as that, because I think it's a book that everyone should read. And that was when I thought we should really do this as a standalone book club book. And I'm so glad we did, because it was just the sort of thing that reminds me of why I love comics and why they're such a powerful medium for storytelling.
Absolutely agreed. All right, I think we could probably gush over this all night long. We probably should move on.
it's true.
What are we doing next week?
Next week, as you said, we're doing another powerful another different book, but equally classic, which is When the Wind Blows by Raymond Briggs.
This is a personal book for me. I actually read this book many, many years ago, and it really moved me back then. So I'm really looking forward to rereading it from now and seeing how that emotion still carries over.
So this is a graphic novel written in 1982. So we're going even further back in time.
Mm-hmm.
Again, this is something. It was made into an animated film. If you can, you should be able to very readily find this in any bookshop, really.
Yeah, Raymond Briggs actually wrote another one about Santa Claus as well, which is fabulous as well.
Yeah, I have read that one as well, actually. I quite like that.
Yeah, so when I read this, I read this when this was new. So I actually read this when I think I was about 15. 15 or 16, and it really amazed me at that time. So I'm really looking forward to rereading this. So everybody go out and get a copy of When the Wind Blows, and we'll talk about it next week.
keeping our very, very upbeat theme that we've been having for the last couple of weeks. But, I will definitely get stuck into this and look forward to joining you all next week as we discuss this. And if you've been listening to us gush over Pedro and me for the last hour, and you haven't read it, you know, if it's not clear enough already, go and spend that time reading that as well. You won't be disappointed.
Agreed. All right, that brings us to an end, Richard.
It's been a long show. People, you probably won't even know, but that we were plagued with technical difficulties behind the scenes.
Second week in a row. We've got to get this sorted out.
I think I need to move to a different suburb.
Just move in. We've got a spare room. Okay.
Okay.
Richard, where can people find more of you on the internet?
They can find me at therealbits.com. That's the RELBits.com. Or if you want to have a chat, you can hit me up on Twitter on DVDBits. And that's where I'll be doing most of my chatting the next few days, because I'm off to a film festival after this.
Oh, I hate you. You're going to have so much fun. You can find me at geekactually.com or on Twitter at David McVeigh. I think that's probably it. And I got to tell you, it's going to be a mystery meet, because I have no idea what sort of music to open this show with.
No, I think if the Real World San Francisco has a theme song and you can dig that up, maybe that's worthwhile. But I've got a few things. I'll give you a few suggestions after we sign off. So,
no problem.
See if one of them makes it in there.
Not a problem at all. Richard, I'll see you again next week.
See you next week, David.
Bye. But you got to have fun.